This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, The Wake Up Call. I'm Dick Paddock, co-host, and Emily and Lori are not.
Never go alone the distance. I heard one spin, it was waved goodbye to the clubs and the dance on the table shaking. Bad boy turned to a live bird, passing around your number to a bunch of strangers. Girls in heels and the lips of red, they're not looking for love. They're looking for sweets. They're looking for daddy. They're looking for sugar. Living so far apart, and like a fool, I thought the ocean divided the continent, but not a faithful heart. Everybody told me that the sunshine that I saw in your eyes was greater than the blue was too. I heard every single word they said, but it sounded like French. Je ne parle pas français, because I was looking for.
Welcome to the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, The Wake Up Call. I'm Dick Paddock, your co-host, and Lori Hoyt, the other co-host, waiting to get on the air. But I do need to mention that this is WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 on your radio dial.
Lori? Okay, so we're starting right on time today, which is great.
Anything's possible.
Huh?
Anything's possible.
Well, yeah. And we're really happy to be here. And our guest today is Judy Hogan, who's a longtime friend and connected with WILF. I don't know if you're still...
Once.
Used to be a WILF member. And she carries on the WILF tradition by being very... active in her community, which is Chatham, in the far reaches down in Moncur. And Moncur is Dick's and my and Wilf's old stomping grounds when there was a strike several years ago that we spent a year traipsing there every week in support of the strikers. That was, what, about 5 years ago? Something like that?
Yeah.
And we got... WILF involved, and WILF organized, and got churches involved, churches even down in Moncur. Mm-hmm. And we got the, what are they called, the county commission there. We got people, politicians involved. It was absolutely a wonderful bringing together of people in support of the strikers. And that was still an old battleground or battle that Dick and I reminisce sometimes, and at that point I felt closer to people in Chatham and the Chatham commissioners than I did my local ones. I mean, we were there so much and appearing, and so anyhow. And Judy lives in Moncur, so that's a special place to us, and I think. Somebody told me, I think maybe John Wagner, that you live right down the street from where there's going to be the coal ash dumping.
Yes, Judy is active against the coal ash dumping for Brickhaven, which is way in the southeast corner of Moncur. And I'm on one of the main truck routes that is bringing the coal ash into Chatham. I'm probably 5 miles by air from that. But I count the trucks as they go by.
Yeah. And we're going to come back to that, but we're going to start our program off with something that's much more happy thinking and happy making. And Judy, in addition to her activism and trying to protect Mother Earth and her community, is a writer and a poet. And she's here to tell us about publishing another book. And so we're going to talk about this book. Oh yes, that's right. We're This is the book.
Hold the book up.
This is the book for those who are going to see it on the People's Channel. That's what we have to keep mentioning. We are on the People's Channel now on Thursday nights at 10 o'clock. Also, they play us a few other times, but that's not a set time.
Right. It's just randomly occurring when we kind of fit in.
When they can fit in. Show. But we're hoping to get a second set time. But right now, our main set time or only set time is Thursday nights at 10 o'clock. And we've been on for a month or more now. And we send these radio shows in, and we've been videoing the radio shows for a couple of months. And so we have a queue of shows ready to go. And this will be one of them at some point. We'll let you know. That's what we're trying to have them let us know, when a particular show is going to play. So this book, which we show, The Sands of, how do you pronounce that?
Gower.
Of Gower.
Gower.
Mm-hmm. The Sands of Gower. And it says the subtitle is The First Penny Weaver Mystery. And you want to tell us about that?
Okay. I've been writing mysteries since 91, which is when I wrote this one originally. And I set it in Wales. I'd been going to Wales for writing vacations, and my favorite place to go was the Gower Peninsula near Swansea. That summer before, 1990, I was there, and I sprained my ankle. And in the UK, they don't give you ice. They give you crutches, and they put you to bed. So, I read and wrote poetry, but my landlady thought I was bored, so she came in one day and said, "Judy, you should write a murder." I like to read murder mysteries, and she knew I was a writer. So I started plotting it, and the next summer I wrote it, based a lot on my own experience. Though there were no murders in any of the books I've written, the experience did not have actual murders in them, but my imagination is good if people were very conflicted and having a hard time getting along with each other, the next step could be murder. So that was the first one.
So that's how it came about, with the suggestion by the landlady.
Yes. But then I finally, in 2000, I'd been trying to publish these as I wrote them. And in 2008, I joined Sisters in Crime and got a lot of support from their subgroup called the Guppies, the Great Unpublished. And and so I learned a lot more about publishing, and I did find I was also trying the national contest every year for the first best traditional mystery, which this is. That is, no gore and no sex, at least explicitly. And that year, 2011, I was a finalist in that national contest. So then I did find a small press publisher who wanted it. That was Killer Frost. And then the next year, I got out the seventh written, which was Farm Fresh and Fatal, and both those books were received well. We didn't get rich, which my publisher decided was bad, though I was not worried. I've never been too worried about getting rich. So she's letting the contracts run out.
And she what?
She's letting the contracts run out through the contracts.
Okay.
So Killer Frost is now not available from Amazon, but I still have copies. And Farm Fresh and Fatal is still, both the ebook and the book are still available. Anyway, I decided, since I couldn't find another publisher to pick up the series, that I would do it myself. So I'm calling my press to publish all these mysteries Hogan-Villa Books. Hogan-Villa from Bougainvillea. And this is the first one. I've used CreateSpace, which is a web opportunity where you can upload your book and upload your cover, and then they sell it to you for so much a copy. And I got a good designer. And so it just came out December 1st, and this is one of the things I'm doing to publicize it, has to do with Penny Weaver, who's my age and also a poet. And then I was about 54.
Now, Judy, she's the one. Penny is in, there's a certain cast of characters that is in all of these mysteries, right?
Yes.
Penny Weaver and some of her friends.
Well, in this first one is when she meets her her future husband, who's a Welch detective, and they fall in love. And then all the other books deal a lot with their relationship, too. But in this book, the North Carolina characters aren't present because it's in Wales.
Uh-huh.
But by the next book, most of the books were written to take place in Riverdale, which is kind of a mixture of Saxbaha, where I lived back then, and Pittsburgh. And the newer ones are set in what I call New Springs, which is kind of like Moncure. Because I moved into Moncure in late 1998. And frankly, ever since I moved there, we've been fighting some kind of contamination or pollution. And I've been doing that. So I take up a lot of issues, starting with the third one especially. I take up a lot of issues of pollution and injustice in this community. But I like to make a murder mystery out of it. Enjoy that.
So, Judy, these books sort of mirror your life, where you places that you have spent some time and that mean a lot to you. The first one starting in Wales, where you were going on vacation,
uh-huh.
And then more the rest of them, at least the two I've read, the Farm Fresh and Killer Frost, they take place in North Carolina, definitely, and more in the area of, although the one in the, what was that, was Killer Frost the one in the university?
Killer Frost takes place in a black college.
In a black college, rather.
Set in Raleigh. But Penny is living in Riverdale at that point.
Yeah, so it still has that Saxapohaw area connection, which is what makes it delightful for people from this area to read, because, you know, you think, oh, that sounds so familiar, you know.
Yeah. Well, and then Farm Fresh and Fatal takes place at a farmer's market, and
uh-huh.
I've done that too. I've done most of the things that come up here. Local politics, air pollution, fracking, now coal ash. In fact, I'm writing a coal ash novel right now. Now, there's not much time to write novels, but I'm trying.
Good for you, because that if all the people who are involved in fighting coal ash buy your book, it'll be a bestseller.
It'll be
a lot of people are fighting.
It'll be a while before I can get it out. I'm going to do 3 books a year, but I have 15 to do, and coal ash would be 16. So it probably won't come out till 2020. Hopefully we won't still be fighting coal ash.
I hope not, right. Too. I hope not, too. So the way to get this then done is you self-published.
I did.
Uh-huh. And that's what more and more people are doing these days.
Yeah, a lot of people gave up on either the big publishers or even the small publishers. Or they started with a small publisher and that publisher kicked them loose. It's very hard to sell enough copies to really make any money. But I just want to sell enough to break even. That's my goal.
Well, you know, and I think it's a wonderful way to feel some sense of accomplishment if you get this frustration and you can't get your work. And I think that's why people are doing it, and it's working fairly well, or at least at times, for people.
Yeah. Well, I have good friends who have copy edited it and pointed out things to me. I run it by other people, and I've gotten good comments on the other books, so I'm heartened. In this new one, I take up the anti-Semitism and anti-German feeling that I ran into in the UK, in Wales, back in 1991, along in there. Even that many years after World War II, the British were still angry at the Germans because, of course, they were bombed by the Germans. and they didn't trust them. My landlady really did. I mean, my landlady, the book is loosely based on my real landlady. She called them Prussians, and they were bad. There was no getting around it.
Mm-hmm.
So into the bed and breakfast, besides Penny and the Prussian and her husband, come two Jews. And that makes for a little old tension that was interesting.
So that, is that what really happened, or is that in your book?
I think that really happened. I can't remember for sure, but I did base some characters on some real people there.
I mean, how did you hear about so much about anti-Semitism still current in 91?
Well, I'd been in this village so many times, and I just had, I think the anti-German feeling was stronger than the anti-Semitism, but, you know, the British, not the intellectuals, not the people in universities, but the ordinary people of Great Britain are still very skeptical of anybody who comes from elsewhere.
Mm.
So all the immigrants, they say things like, you're okay once you get to the White Cliffs of Dover, and they just don't quite, even Americans, they like Americans pretty well, but even Americans aren't quite the thing.
Aren't quite accepted.
Yeah. Though I got away with more than, I tried to pretend I wasn't American mostly over there, and I was very pleased when I got taken for French.
What do you mean you pretended you weren't American? What are
well,
you?
Well, I didn't really like most of the Americans I ran into on trains and places. There weren't too many in Wales at that time. But a lot of traveling Americans make no effort to understand the cultures they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember one conversation with a woman from Scotland, and the American sitting opposite us on the train said, well, you must be pleased because she's a woman. The Scottish girl just bristled because they hated what was her name, the premier?
Oh, Thatcher.
Thatcher. They hated Thatcher with a passion. Her being a woman did not help.
So you are American?
Oh, yes. I'm very American.
Okay, born misunderstood.
Born in Kansas. But I was taken for, in Russia, I was taken for a Russian woman. And,
okay.
and I rode free on the metro because they thought I was already 55, which is once you get to 55 in the big cities, you ride free.
In Russia.
And when they didn't challenge me, I just kept doing it.
Of course.
And I wore a scarf. But nowadays, the Russians are wearing fancy hats and, you know, there's no more babushkas around.
So, which reminds me that you made some delightful trips to Russia. That's where you wrote a lot of beautiful poetry. And are there any of your books? I know your poetry, a lot of it, or some of it, is centered around Russia. I wonder if any of your mysteries will be centered in...
I don't think I could do the police part of Russia. I certainly have enough experience, but... Well, maybe in my 90s, but I've got plenty set out to do in my 80s.
You'll have to go back to refresh your memory.
I have plans over the next 5 years to edit and get together all the Russian writings I've done, because I did write a lot, diary, narrative, and poetry when I was doing Russian exchanges from 1990 to 2001.
Yeah, that would be.
Yeah, I got a lot on. Someone said last night at the reading about a bucket list. I guess you all know that that's what you're going to do before you die.
Right.
Well, I haven't started the bucket list. I've got too much to do before the bucket list. I have to go to 100, or I can't consider the bucket.
So, before we turn to Kolesh, tell us a little bit more about this book, The Sounds of Gower.
Well, for one thing, it has a lot of the beautiful Welsh scenery described. It also has a lot of passion in it. I had never written a mystery before. I had read The Golden Age, and so it's set up kind of like a Golden Age mystery with a lot of suspects and a lot of police interviews. However, they didn't have much sex, but I did like to write about sex, so I had a lot of sex in it. Then I learned.
Good for you.
Then I learned that
we're all ears.
Traditional mysteries weren't supposed to have that much sex. So I trimmed it a little. But it still got a lot of passion in it. You won't be disappointed. Well, you know, women hit their sexual maturity at age 50. Did you know that?
I knew it was in our later years that we finally felt self-confident enough, probably.
Oh, well, I don't think it's all self-confidence. But men hit theirs at 13.
So I know there's quite a disconnect, isn't there?
Yeah, talking about your May, December.
That could explain it.
Only not the traditional May, December with the older guy and the younger woman.
Yeah,
it should be the other way around.
Yeah. But anyway, the German guest is murdered, and of course all the British are so hostile to Prussians that they're suspects, and Penny gets to help Kenneth figure it out.
Kenneth is the German guest.
No, Kenneth is the Welch inspector that she falls in love with. They fall in love. It's quite mutual. They fall in love.
Yes.
But it's hard to get any time to see about the love with all this murder investigation going on. And then it's hard to do the murder investigation when they're so attracted. So those are the problems.
So it's sounding delightful, and we'll hold it up again. It's a beautiful picture of a bay or a beachhead there.
Yeah, it's the Three Cliffs Bay, which is on the Gower Peninsula. And the city and county of Swansea gave me permission. I saw this image on the internet, and it was from them, and I asked, from their tourist board, and I asked if I could use it for the cover, and they said yes. So, yeah, it's a very beautiful place. And I'm going to be reading at Flyleaf Books on January 19th, which I believe is a Tuesday night.
Okay, and, January 19th.
It's 7 o'clock. And if you live in Chatham, if you are able to hear this from Chatham, I'll be reading are signing in Siler City on January 9th at Pat Dawson's Paperbacks Plus.
So we should announce that at the end of the show again, or even a couple other times. Like we take a station break in the middle of the show and get a chance to catch our breath, and we could make the announcement then, remind us, and then at the end. Because we always tell people, and we forget, and I'll say it, have your paper and pencil ready, or pen.
for taking notes.
We always try to have people give
Websites
and phone numbers and how to get in touch if you have more questions or whatever.
Yeah,
we'll be doing that at the end of the show for sure. Okay. Yeah. So we'll come back about the book, but I guess we'll... Oh, that is such a beautiful picture. I didn't realize that Wales was so beautiful.
It is. It's a fairly small country, very proud of its Welsh heritage. And it has a rocky coast with beaches like that. And I used to love to roam around. There were a lot of things you could see. From all the different invasions of the UK over the years. In fact, people survived the Ice Age on that peninsula in some of the caves they have. And you can see the Norman castles from the French invasion, and a lot of the names are from the Vikings, like Swansea was originally Swan's Eye. And Worm Head means dragon head, and it's a formation that sticks out to sea. Yeah.
And I also think, you know, so many, at least there's been some books written about the Welsh coal miners. What was that? There was a famous one way back that was made into a movie. Mm-hmm. And I forget the name of it.
Molly Maguires?
Huh?
Is it the Molly Maguires?
Pardon?
The Molly Maguires? Is that the name of the movie?
No.
No, that's not that
well,
one.
Maybe that's another one. But I think it was How Green Was My Valley or
that
something.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Something like that. And then in the recent trilogy by Greg Fallows, his first book, and he wrote a trilogy of the 20th century. And he's a very well-known British writer. He started out with mysteries, and then he got into cathedrals, and he wrote two big books about the cathedral town, which I'm blocking on, but it's a famous one. And he wrote one in the 13th century, and then he went back and did another one of that, Glastonbury. Mm-hmm. Of the 11th century. And he did a trilogy, the 20th century, and in his trilogy, he takes these five families, British, German, mm-hmm. American, Russian, and maybe Welsh. And the first story is about a Welsh family, the miners, at the turn of the century, mm-hmm. just before the First World War. And so my think whenever I think about Wales, I think of coal mines and didn't think about about the beauty of it. You know, that's the connection. So that's nice to make a different connection about how beautiful it is.
Dylan Thomas was from there too, you know. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that would be a good time now to take a station break.
Already?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. The time is going too fast.
Time's flying when you're having fun.
And, oh, my goodness. Okay.
So this is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom presenting the Wake-Up Call, which is a weekly show about politics and the arts, not necessarily in that order. Today we have Judy Hogan, a local author and environmentalist, as our guest, and she's talking about her new book. Which you probably can get over at Internationalist Bookstore, which is our Internationalist Bookstore, which is our underwriter, the only underwriter we've ever had. And so, and that's over here on Lloyd Street, right near the Art Center, where our studio is located. So we encourage you to come on by and wave through the window at us. Which somebody just did, right? And then drop by International Bookstore and buy a couple of books, find all kinds of books you never would have heard of otherwise, and then there's always the rack of bumper stickers that we like to promote. And this is WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 on your radio dial and streamed from the website of the radio station, which is WCOMFM.org. And let's see, later on today, we invite you to tune in for News and Views with Chris Fitzsimon of North Carolina Policy Watch at 6 o'clock. And
do we have any announcements? The Rogers Road.
Okay.
The Rogers Road Community Center is going to be having a big Christmas toy giveaway. And I'm not sure when it is, but I think they're still collecting through December 19th, anyhow. They're collecting toys. You can bring them to the center, which is off Rogers Road. You go halfway down Rogers Road, turn onto Edgar Street, and you go down a few blocks, and there it is on the corner of Edgar and something. I think it's a Purefoy. I'm not sure. But
It's pretty obviously a community center.
It's what?
It's pretty obviously a community center.
Yes. And
everything else in the neighborhood is houses.
It celebrated its first year anniversary. It took 40 years for the beginnings of some justice for that community, and the community center is the community finally responding and doing what's right. There's more to go with things that are needed in terms of the sewer system and the water system. But the community center is a wonderful, it's a little jewel, and it has up and running with so many programs for children, for adults. There's tutoring, there's literacy, all kinds of programs. And they do this big book bag giveaway in September to, I think, 500 book bags get given away to kids, you know, stocked with the supplies that they need to get started. And this is going to be the big toy giveaway. So you can bring toys for any ages. Just have them unwrapped so they can see for whom the particular toy will be appropriate, what age, what gender. And you can always bring cash. Cash is always, always appreciated. And so
there's another announcement we should make, I think. Okay. And that is that this month's Wilf radio show, I mean Wilf meeting, will be at Rogers Road Community Center rather than the normal location. And
the normal date usually would have been the 12th, but we changed it to the 19th.
Right. And it will be at 10 o'clock on Saturday.
And the public's welcome?
Yes.
Everybody's welcome?
Public's welcome. Yeah. I'm glad to have you come.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So we're back to our guest, Judy Hogan. I'm Lori Hoyt, co-host with Dick Paddock, who just gave the station break, and Emily O'Hare is our videographer. And we're back to go to the second half of our program, and we're talking to Judy Hogan, and we've been talking about her new book that we're very excited about. I can't wait to read it, Judy. I love your attitude. And Emily's thirsting to be right. She's glad I'm a fast reader. She'll get it pretty quickly. So now we're going to talk about the sadder part of that it still needs to be done. For Moncure, still in a struggle of one sort of another for justice, and this justice that we're talking about is up against that big monster, Duke Power.
Duke Energy now.
Oh, it's Duke Energy.
You know they're the largest public utility company in the world?
Yes.
I keep forgetting that. Now, why? That's such it's scary, that fact. The largest in the world.
And they've been told by the North Carolina legislature to get rid of their coal ash. They have 150 million tons of it. And along every major North Carolina river where there's a coal ash plant, the coal ash ponds where they just dump the stuff are leaking into the water into the rivers where we get our drinking water, including the Cape Fear where Sanford gets its drinking water, just below us, and all the towns down that river, down to Wilmington, Fayetteville, Fort Bragg, all those people depend on the Cape Fear for their water, and it's already leaking.
So all the others, I don't know if people realize that. We know that there was the big break.
Dan River started the whole pressure on Duke to do something. You know, they neglected a pipe. They just neglected a pipe, and that's why it happened. 80 million tons of coal ash into the river. Anyway, we started a group. Once we learned they wanted to bring 12 million to Chatham and 8 million to Lee, and those sites are both very close to me, probably equally about 5 miles by air, we formed a group. Elaine Chiosa of the Haw River Assembly helped me get it started. And I didn't really want to be chair because I tried to be a writer these years. But nobody else wanted to. Elaine had a lot to do. So I ended up, by April, I said I would be the chair. And we got other officers. And we became a Blue Ridge Environmental Defense League chapter, which gave us...
Oh, you are.
Yeah, which gave us immediately nonprofit tax-exempt status.
Great.
So if you want to help us, you can take it off your taxes. We're using the money right now, the major part of the money, to pay our lawyer, John Runkel, who has worked in this area of landfills for many years and has worked a lot with North Carolina Warren trying to get Duke Energy to change its tune in several areas, like allow solar roofs and things like that. Duke is actually suing this black church in Greensboro for having solar on its roof.
I know. That was what? That must be such bad publicity.
Well, they're getting, we're helping them get plenty of bad publicity.
The reason they're suing, as I understand it, is because the church was selling excess power and they can't sell it. That, at least I thought that was the
Well, there is
problem.
An issue there, but there shouldn't be. They shouldn't be.
It's like to sell your excess electricity, you should be able to sell it right back. And why?
Well, anyway, so some people are upset about that, but we simply don't want the coal ash. And we went to all the hearings, and we gave good arguments, and people, we have some research scientists in our group, and they sent in very impressive information. For instance, the liners they want to put down to keep the coal ash from going into the ground are about as thick as two credit cards. And they can wrinkle and hence break and leak. They can be disturbed by little pieces of coal that are still in the coal ash. Or they when they're being put down, they can be broken by the heavy equipment that's putting them down. And there's 12 kinds of bacteria that eat them. But to hear Duke Energy...
It's not really funny, but oh my God.
To hear Duke Energy, well, you have to keep your sense of humor.
You have to keep a sense of humor.
To hear Duke Energy spokespeople and the Department of Environment in North Carolina say this is going to be so safe, it's not going to hurt anybody, it's not going to be any pollution, is just a farce, you know. Anyway, we did all that we could through the hearings, and then they gave all the permits. And the Army Corps, the Army Corps man was very open to us, encouraged us to send even children's letters to him. And the Army Corps permit came through, too. They had to have two water permits, one from the state and one from the feds through the Army Corps. And then we did everything we could. Actually, the company that's moving the coal ash, Shara, has been caught in two violations. One right before they got their permit, and the other just a few weeks ago. Same situation, working on the railroad line, not having the sedimentation permit. But nobody seems to worry about that. And the people at the last hearing we went to, which was to give Chara a new permit since the old one wasn't working because they'd had a violation. the people from the Environment Natural Resources Diener, they sat up on the stage and they wouldn't even look at us. So somebody up there is pulling a lot of strings. It's got to be the reason. At any rate, we're suing. We're suing the Department of it's now Department of Environmental Quality. We went to court on December 7th. Has to go to North Carolina court first to the Office of Administrative Hearings. We had a fairly young judge, a woman, who overruled the DEQ people several times.
Ooh.
Many times, actually. She let us say most of what we wanted to say. And she heard witnesses from our communities, Lee and Chatham, and she also heard from a man in Lee County who works for the geology part of their county, who studied the whole situation before, in the very beginning, discovered that if they put 8 million tons of coal ash into this site, that it would be 50 feet high. So they talked in the beginning about how it would be ground level, and they were going to build a park on it, or buildings could sit on it. Well,
the park sounds like Rogers Road, what was promised to them with that dump that got to be Lord knows how high.
Yeah, well, so that was the last person who was in court, and then the judge heard a few more things, and she said, well, we wanted to continue it, maybe we could get some more experts in there, but she said, I'm gonna basically close this for now, and I'm going to give myself 45 days to make a decision, and I'm going to be as fair as I know how. And so basically you all can go home now, wait for my decision. Well, I had a good feeling about that judge. On the other hand, she was appointed by McCrory, and he wants the coal ash. So if she's brave enough, she may say that they did the permits wrong. As far as we can see, they really did. There's no way you're not going to have coal ash get into the air or the water the way they're trucking it, you know, all over.
So when will the 45 days be up?
Well, around January 22nd, I figure. Though somebody said she could take another 45. Meantime, the trucks roll, and we try to watch and call in problems.
So the trucks are rolling.
Yeah.
And so it's too bad that things couldn't be postponed while she comes to her decision.
Well, she has to give a court order before it can be stopped.
Mm.
But we are hopeful. Though it's discouraging because our county commissioners voted to take money from Duke, $19 million. And, $19 million.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as the coal ash began coming, which wasn't until October 20th, they gave the commissioners an advance of $6 million. Well, but it's against the first 4 million tons of coal ash. They have to accept the coal ash before they get any more money. I told them, I don't want you to get any more money. In fact, they'd have to turn some of the money back if we stop them before they get 4 million tons. But, of course, they've already spent it. They do want to take care of MineCare, but the trouble is we don't want the problems in the first place for them to have to take care of. So
where they're dumping it, it's a former mine, right?
Well, they call it a clay mine. The clay mine is where they dug clay for bricks. There's a brick plant down there.
Yeah.
But the mine is only a small part, maybe 25 to 30% of the site. Right now, they're logging trees. They've got one cell, permission to have one cell of coal ash. And they're filling that, and they're preparing a railroad spur so they can come by rail. But MineCare people live all along the rail line, all along the travel routes, and houses close to the road. And most of our black community lives along those roads. We are probably, as a community, around 40% black. A few Hispanics, not too many, maybe 5%, the rest white. And most people are working class people. We're starting to get more retired people who have a little more money coming in, or young families, but most of us don't have much money. We are low income, by and large.
So it always seems that way, that the poor, the minorities, the blacks, are in the way or on the way to so many with the fracking, with the coal ash. It's the most vulnerable. Just like with climate change, it's the most vulnerable who suffer the most, and it's so bloody unfair. It's just terrible.
Yeah. Well, we're doing another way to raise money, a gospel sing benefit. at one of our churches on January 10th, 2:30 Sunday afternoon. And write it down, she says.
Yeah, she's writing right down the guy, so we can maybe announce it next week again. It's going to be a gospel sing.
Yeah, on Sunday, January 10th at 2:30 in the afternoon at the Mount Olive Missionary Baptist Church in Moncur, which is right in downtown Moncur. And we're gathering some other church choirs to sing too. And we're trying really hard to keep the spirits up of the people. They're discouraged, both by the commissioner's action and by the fact that they see the trucks.
So this will be 2:30 on Sunday, January 10th. And so they're discouraged by them taking the money. Is any of that money going to help Moncur?
Well, yeah, they've already allocated some for fire engines, and they're going to help. Some of the people's water is already contaminated before it comes, probably from either the brick company or the coal ash ponds. There's a lot of people living near this site. There's two families in particular. Just makes me sick. They're right next door to the site. They're dealing with the heavy truck noise, trucks speeding and driving carelessly, and it's really bad. And they can see the coal ash over the dump, you know, hanging in the air.
So can the county commissioners be prevailed upon to give extra help to them, or?
Well, we're asking them to help get them water. They will be offering county water when they get organized about that at a reduced fee, but we're asking them to provide drinking water in the meantime. You know, Duke Energy has coal ash people, coal ash, around coal ash ponds all over the state. There are people whose wells are already contaminated. They didn't even know it. And Duke was giving them a gallon of water per day per person, which is hardly enough. And now they're going to discontinue it. Yeah.
Because?
I don't know what the because is. They have billions. It wasn't costing them very much to do a gallon per person per day. It wasn't enough, but it was something. These people are not rich. It's not like people can say, oh, I think I'll move. Live somewhere else.
So with all that millions that the county commissioners got, could they not move these people and get them a new place to live?
Oh, that's a good question.
I mean, that would be what I'd be to ask for, a relocation, and a new house. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Well, they'd have a lot of people to relocate, believe me.
But you said there's two families that are particularly, yeah. They're afraid that if they start.
Well, and these families have lived there. You know, their roads are named for the family names. They've been there for hundreds of years. That's hard to give up your home. You know?
It is. No, I didn't think it would be easy, but I thought if it's that.
Well, it is an idea. We might try that and see what happens.
Yeah.
See how that works.
You know, if you ask for more, then they may feel, oh, phew, let's just give them some water or something. You know, but ask for a new house or relocation.
That's a good point, Laurie. I'll keep that in mind.
Okay.
Bid high.
That is so tragic. People's lives are being uprooted and ruined with being poisoned.
Yeah, it is poisonous. It may not kill you fast, but it kills you slow.
Yeah, by this, you know, multi-billion company that's the biggest utility company in the world. I mean, are their stockholders raking it in?
Well, actually, one of their stockholders who lives down there next to the site, he's got a no coal ash sign in his yard. He told me at one of our first meetings that he thought it was a big mistake what they were doing. He doesn't live there all the time, though, you know.
Yeah, well, tell him to try to get some of his other stockholders.
Oh, we had one great story. One of the young women, well, you know, 40s, from the Lee County group who lives next to the site, Dawn Crawley, she managed to get a way into the shareholders meeting in Charlotte, which was last fall.
That's always a good idea to try to get into.
Yeah, what do you call it when you get to go in place of somebody else?
Proxy.
Proxy. She got a proxy. And Lynn Good, the CEO, was up on the stage, and Dawn raised her hand and said that she didn't want this coal ash, that she had farm animals. She has goats, milk goats, and donkeys, and chickens, and she went on about that. And Lynn Good said, "Well, I understand your passion." And she said, "Lady, this isn't my passion. This is my life."
Oh.
Yep.
Good for her, yeah. It's not a hobby.
No.
This is,
yeah.
They're so rich, that's how they think, you know. Like.
Yeah, it's probably hard for them to let themselves realize how people are suffering.
Yes, it probably is.
You do wonder about the mental life of some of these executives, or Lynn Good, who's at the very top. You wonder.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, so we got down, so there's going to be a gospel sing on Sunday, January 10th,
uh-huh.
And that would be really fun to go to. We ought to go to that, because it's in the afternoon.
2:30, right?
2:30 in the afternoon, Mount Olive Missionary Baptist Church, right downtown Moncur. We ought to make a wolf plan.
Make another pilgrimage.
Another pilgrimage. We don't have to bring sandwiches this time.
Right.
But we have to bring people, which we're used to bringing.
Right.
And we'll announce that at our wolf meeting this Saturday and see if we can.
That would be great.
Make that a wolf pilgrimage.
And just telling people. And we also have a website where you can donate money.
Yeah, what is that?
It's www.crowdrise, CROWDRISE, one word, .com/ coal ash fight against Duke Energy. And that's all one word. And then a site comes up, and you can donate. And you can also send money for our lawyer to.
So the site comes up when you do all of that.
Yeah.
Then
and you can be anonymous if you prefer.
And so what happens then? A site comes up?
Yeah, a site comes up.
Website with the donate button.
It has a button to push to donate.
Okay.
And then if you want to send a check, you can send a check to our group, which is the Chatham Citizens Against Coal Ash Dump. Or CCACAD.
CCACAD. AG.
D.
D.
There's a D. Against the dump. At 248 Buckhorn Road, Moncur, North Carolina, 27559. That's our treasurer's address.
And what is the number again? The
248 okay. Buckhorn Road, Moncur, 27559.
27559.
John Runkle has reduced his fee, but he had to prepare for court and he had to prepare the challenges to the permits. At the moment, we're a little behind in our bills to John Runkle, so any even small donations would be great.
So donations for the legal defense.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And so.
And remember that those donations are tax deductible.
Right. Do it now and you get it for this year.
Right.
Tax deductible.
It's that
yes.
time of year.
So Chatham Citizens Against Coal Ash Dump, or CCACAD, 248 Buckhorn Road, Moncur, 27559.
Correct.
And we'll announce that again next week.
Okay. I gave you, in your book, I gave you a flyer that has it, too.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, so. You are so prepared. Thank you.
There you are.
Thank you. Okay.
That has the basic data and everything.
Yeah. Great. So, folks, if you care about Mother Earth and the environment.
And the people who live on it.
And the people who are... who are being exploited and poisoned by Duke Power. They are now called
Duke Energy.
Duke Energy. Duke Energy. And they are dumping their coal ash in Moncure, North Carolina. It's in Chatham County. And they're already, the trucks are, how many trucks roll by each day?
Well, they estimated 20 at first, and then they changed it to 40. They're coming both from Wilmington and Charlotte. I see, on some days, I see as many as 20, though I'm not watching all the time, but measuring about 20. And then on the other roads, you know, like Moncure Flatwood Road, where the dump is actually located, we went down there to do a demonstration on December 4th, and we saw trucks, many trucks coming away from the, going to and coming away from the dump site.
So yeah. 20 to 40 trucks a day.
Yeah, I would estimate they're probably running 40 trucks a day of coal ash, but they don't usually run during real heavy rain because they don't want it to get too wet. And it's partly covered with a sort of plastic, but there's coal ash dust that you cannot see that's just as toxic. So that worries me. What is coming off the trucks that I can't see?
Right, because they're, the reason that you can't see them is because they're so tiny that they get right into your lungs.
That's right, and your brain. They can go straight to your brain. That's a cheering thought.
Yeah. Really? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, we're right. They're wrong. So we just got to persist.
Right. Yeah. You want to go through those again? We've got about 3 minutes before the end of the show.
We've been talking to Judy Hogan, mm-hmm. who is a former WILF member and still WILF supporter and friend. And she's been here promoting her book, which I want to mention again.
Right.
The Sands of Gower, taking place in Wales. And it's her first Penny Weaver mystery. Two other Penny Weaver mysteries have been published, and I loved them, and I'm looking forward to this is the first Penny Weaver mystery. And she's a writer and a poet, but she's also a staunch activist, and she's been as the chairperson for the Chatham Citizens Against the Coal Ash Dump, and she's telling us about they're already, the trucks are rolling. There is a court case that we may hear by the middle or end of January, although that can be postponed another 45 days. We are hopeful, but we don't know if the court can stop it or will stop it. We know they can. Will they is the question. And so they're raising money for their legal fees to sue Duke Utility.
Duke Energy. We're suing the Department of Environment for releasing the fees.
Okay.
I mean the permits.
The Department of Environment. And so we're asking people to donate to the Chatham Citizens Against the Coal Ash Dump, or CCACAD, 248, if you want to send a check, 248 Buckhorn Road, Moncure, 27559. It's tax deductible, but also you can do it online, which people like to do these days, to www.crowdrise.com/coal ash fight against Duke Energy, all one word. And then
there's a donate button there,
the
right there on the website.
The donate button will come up, and you can. I'm not a technology person, but I got it out. And we'll talk about it again next week. What can we do besides this? Is there anything else we can do? We are going to come to the Gospel Sing, which is also to raise money, so we should bring our checkbooks with us.
That's January 10th.
Sunday, January 10th at 2:30 at Mount Olive Missionary Baptist Church in downtown Moncure. This would be a real pleasurable way to donate and feel we're helping and be part of this. And also, Judy is going to be at Flyleaf on January 19th at 7 o'clock. And is there anything else we can do that?
Well, I can give them my phone number. If you're interested in Killer Frost, for instance, yeah. It's out of print, but I have.